woman said this, you've got to remember, and it stops your independent thinking, your thing out of the box. But this department that we're oversighting goes beyond the box that you're supposed to be. So you're supposed to think even further. And I suspect, for me, my simple definition of Bantu education that we didn't want was about that. That if you, the Bantu education, by definition, my definition, was that you must memorize what your lecturer knows. You mustn't be able to think beyond your lecturer, and that would make you never to be better than your lecturer. So that you could just memorize, you don't ask questions why. And science is about asking why, and then coming with innovation. So Bantu education was not to ask why. Maybe that's why we don't have a lot of people who are scientists, whether formal or informal. It's because of not asking those questions why. So you can, but I'm going to ask Shana, there are two people that we forgot to mention here. I don't want them to kill me and say, are we not that important? Shana, if you could just introduce, it's a husband and wife sitting there.
To the members and the officials, those are our resource team. It's Dr. Ilya Madikani, he's our researcher, and Dr. Renee Osborne-Mullins, which is our content advisor. They're there to ensure that the committee, the members are empowered and capacitated to engage fruitfully. Thanks.
So we're going to go back and look at our dates of birth. I still believe you are the younger. You might be bigger than us by far. But I still believe he's the youngest. Let's bet.
I'm sure. Let's bet.
No, we're going to make a bet. A 500 let's bet. Okay. Over to you, TJ.
Thanks, Chair. And as I said, thank you very much to the members for the question. So we've agreed we're going to divide the question. I will try and do maybe in each one of them maybe just a high-level response, and then I'll ask the people who know more than me to then take over. On the first question of Honorable Lotriot on the IKS and where does it feature, we have a program in the department that is looking at IKS at three parts. One is on the advocacy part, where we try and convince ourselves, by the way, not only others outside. We say in the department, even us, need to remember that what the chair said, IKS has been with us for some time, and therefore we need to really make sure that it's part of engagement with the public in general. And so that's the office that does it. The second part is a part that looks at how do you mainstream, if you want to use that word, IKS. And here they are, for instance, setting up, or they have set up, a degree of Bachelor of IKS at the University of Northwest. So you can now go and study and get a degree in Bachelor of IKS. And then they have the third part of the work is how do we go into whether you call them claims or therapeutic work that is done by IKS practitioners to understand why it works and get the scientific understanding of it, whether it's a medicinal plant, including, so that's what they do. And they have now set up an African traditional medicine center of, well, not an excellence, but a center. University of Natal is getting involved, and then there was a unit that was at MRC. Those are the ones that are doing the, if you like, the scientific, if you like, understanding of why certain things are going to be working. On issues of advocacy, just going back to the first one, they have set up a range of things that they are implementing. The one is how do we both internationally and locally deal with the protection of IKS and agree on benefit sharing arrangements. It's a big debate internationally. They lead the discussions on the World Intellectual Property Office on this. And then we have, at the moment, a bill, IKS draft bill for the protection as well as the recording of the knowledge and benefit sharing that we have developed. It's still stuck somewhere because we are trying to get agreement with the Department of Trade and Industry to harmonize it. So there are those three things, advocacy, mainstreaming, if you like, and then commercialization, some of the ideas. At an appropriate time, we would be very happy to bring some of the products that are now in the commercial domain on the work that have been done in the department over the last 7 or 8 years of this IKS. But again, to just the broad presentation, if you're interested, Chair, Dr. Yona Seledi and the team would be delighted to come and share this in detail with you, sir. And then the second question was, we invest in knowledge production and human capital. Well, there are different aspects. If we look at the production of knowledge side, the key outputs are the publications. What is the value of the publications? I don't know. The people that we produce, what we have agreed this year we're going to do is we're going to do a tracking study of the students that come out of the system and see, one, where they are and whether they are working, and we are trying to develop a measure, an indicator of the contribution that they are making where they are working, because we believe that there are studies that people have done that show that when someone has completed a master's and a PhD, their contribution to the economy is a certain factor higher than somebody even with a degree. So we're developing these tracer studies, so to call, and the DDG for this area has been asked to do this. They will be working with the HSRC to do these tracer studies in order to get a return on investment. But on other areas of knowledge exploitation, we have now agreed that in fact, the first part of the answer is that on the knowledge exploitation, you measure, if you remember the graph of quality of life, as well as there are indicators that are out there that can be used to track. But I did indicate it's rather a complex thing to claim the relationship between what comes out of the system and the impact that you're making. So we've started a framework for tracking this with somebody from outside. Now we want to try and implement it by identifying one of the sector where we want to look at the contributions that have been made from the work that we've done into the economy. So again, when that work has been developed in much more detail, we'll be able to share these with you. But on the patent side, we can track how many patents come, how many of those have been turned into licenses, what is the revenue that is coming from licenses that we can, both locally and abroad. And this is the work that last year was done for the first time by a report that was produced by the National Advisory Council on Innovation, including the work that we are doing to impacting on the technology balance of payment, the point that was made by the chair. So at an appropriate time, maybe between ourselves and NECI, that report is available and we can make it available to you. But this topic of how do you track return on investment is something that we are working on, and at an appropriate time. My sense is that we may have something maybe later this calendar year, early next calendar year, we'll be able to share at least the framework, and then we'll be using the framework to collect the data so that we can report on these things in a quantitative way. So those are the two questions from you. Honorable Lindy Maseko, the 1%, the two parts to the question, and then I'll hand over to Romima. My guess is good as anyone's guess as to when we'll reach the 1%. However, at the moment, the ruling party and now government has suggested that by 2019 we agree and endorse a target of 1.5% of GDP. So that's what we're working towards. Now, the money is not only coming from the public purse. About 40-odd percent comes from the public purse. Another 35 or so from the private, and another 15 from international sources. So we've started to do some modeling work as to what would it take for us to get to that percentage 1.5. but where will the sources of money come from? At the moment, we think that there is a lot of money that we can get by asking the provinces to invest in some technology and innovation activities. We don't have this. We are not happy with the amount of money that the private sector is investing. We also think that we can leverage a bit more than 15% from international sources. So we'll be translating the modeling work that we've done into a set of, and Mr. Patel perhaps can elaborate on this a little bit more, where the sources and the program of then mobilizing the resources to work towards 1.5 and what it would do over the period and whether we have the absorptive capacity. Because if you assume that we are now sitting at 0.7, 6 or 0.8%, 1.5 means basically doubling the amount of money. Now, under these economic conditions, that's going to be a tough, but we have to be, as you say, creative and inventive around where the sources will come from. The Paleo Sciences and the Innovation Hub link, it's not as strong, the Innovation Hub link, as we would like it to be. But I have had the honor to meet the new Premier of Gauteng. He has requested that we set up a meeting with him, as well as the work that Program 5 has been doing, not only within Gauteng, but with other provinces around the science parks and innovation parks in the regions that you can use in order to make sure that the spin-off, the new companies that are coming out of this area can be located, but also deepen high-tech industries that are located in that area. And again, this is another source of funding, but I think we need to deepen our relationship with the provincial structures. There is work that we've been done. I know that the Free State is coming on board. KwaZulu-Natal is coming on board. The Western Cape, we have negotiated, and they've already agreed on the land for Science and Innovation Park in Pinelands, not far from here. Who else? And then, of course, Gauteng. So a couple of them are beginning to come to. I know in the Eastern Cape there is an industrial zone, and we've been working with MEC Jonas, who's now the Deputy Minister for Finance, on innovation and industrial development activities in East London. So there are, again, examples of things that we've started, but I think they just need to be deepened. And again, if the committee can help us in getting the provinces. In other parts of the world, I had an opportunity to visit Brazil. They actually have provincial funds for science and technology. And they dedicate money for activities that are more sort of the use of science and technology for, excuse me, the challenges that they have in the province. So this can be done. Local talent identification, I will hand over that question to Dr. Daniel Adams, who will then be able to do that. And also the question of the 2030 target of 100 PhDs per million. What we will be doing this year is, now that we've been given this indication that 1.5% of gross expenditure on R&D is a target, we're going to do a modeling work of how many PhDs we can produce. Now, there are limiting factors as to how many you can produce in your own country, supervisory capacity, and how many supervisors are there to. So we'll have to do a modeling. What is the capacity that we can, with the universities we have and with the capacity we have? And then we will have a sense of how many of these masters and PhDs can then be trained national. But we've also been given a task of, if we had to send people abroad, what would it cost and how many we can send abroad. So we'll be doing that work hopefully by, again, early next year. We should have indicative numbers of how many we can in the country and what would be required for that, how many abroad, and what would be the numbers that are required for that. The working with SANDF, the answer is no, we don't work with them, not directly at least, because we tend to focus on postgraduate training. So I think in the case of artisanal training and support, there's an opportunity for us to work with them that can always be explored, maybe within the work that they are doing in Program 5. The protection of licenses and spin-out companies, there is an act that broadly was passed in 2008. It's an act called IPR Act for Publicly Financed R&D. So in other words, if you receive money from the public source, you are supposed to make sure that you have adequate instruments to protect the knowledge that you generate. So, and then every institution needs to convince us, and we've set up an agency called the National Intellectual Property Management Office that is working with all public institutions to make sure that there's a framework for protecting intellectual property. And then where you can exploit, there are mechanisms. So if you have, of course, a license is always preceded by a patent where you already protect your knowledge and then you license to those, and that's how you protect it through a patent. So those are the mechanisms that are in place. And may I jump, Chair, with your permission, to respond to your question of if you are interested in your project in your law degree. This area of IPR Act in publicly financed is a new area, and it's an area where I think there could be exciting work that you can do for your own studies, and we could put you in touch with the lady who is running the National Intellectual Property Management Office, Dr. Kerry Fall, and you can just talk to her. She's a patent attorney. And then the Coffee Baba Initiative, yes, we are delighted about this, and I'll hand over to Imran to answer the questions, especially the ones that Honorable Tuplant asked on what status, where we're going, and so forth. So I'm going to ask. The medicinal plants in the Northern Cape, and have we looked at this? Not really. We hope that this traditional medicine center will probably then start looking for what's available out there, because really they have been set up to work with those people who say, there is a medicinal plant that we think has got some therapeutics, so they are meant to do that. But again, we'd be happy to follow a specific lead that you might have with the engagement that you have around the Northern Cape. So I think that answers all of the first two questions. The next one was Honorable Kigana on the development initiative. So I'm going to ask Imran to talk about that, because there's a whole program on innovation for inclusive development. Give you maybe more than the two examples that I give you. Early childhood development, and whether we're starting at that level, the answer is no, but it's something that we would be willing to explore with the Department of Social Development and Basic Education, as to say, at what age would you like to interest the kids, and could we have a program in the ECD program? It's something we would be delighted to. And then the vacant posts in the department, and how many people are acting, and the demographics, and then we said Obukwena will provide the responses to that in much more detail. And then medicinal plant research on marijuana, the answer is no, nothing direct, but I think again I can see it's becoming a very nice, interesting topic. We'd be happy to do work. Again, we can speak to Professor Yona Seleti and the team. I'll ask, as I say, on the EC Eastern Cape program, Honorable Chair Blanche, I'll ask Imran to respond. So maybe Imran, let's start with you and go that way, and then we'll assess whether the members are happy with our responses, Chair.
Maybe while Imran is organizing himself, you know, there's something that is going on. There are innovations that have happened. And most of these innovations have got economic spin-offs. And most of us as human beings were driven by the finances. And now, if somebody, because you are being driven by how much are you getting for what, if there are new innovations that are coming, you get scared that they're going to take over your economy, whatever you call it, that threatening your stable that you're getting money. Now, how do you balance that? That even if I come with a new thing, I'm asking this because of the question that came from Kwaza. Because if one of the things that made it not to be easy to get into the market is that there was nobody who was going to claim that it's my patent, whatever. So there came the other paraldehydes, all the other sedatives, and somebody said, okay, let's leave this one out and promote these ones, so that we make our economic, this one are not going to get any economic benefits because it's already somewhere, so we rather kill it. And I think it's the same with some of the indigenous plants that you come. You know, I come from Eastern Cape. There's something that we used to eat called umfin. I don't know what it is in English, but you take it raw from, and when you analyze it, you find that it has got more mineral benefits and vitamin benefits as compared to your spinach and the carrot. But because somebody is benefiting from the carrot, and they promoted that one at the expense of this one. So these are the things that how to, not that we need to kill the one that is already there, but to balance that even this one has got it. So let it develop. And unfortunately, science doesn't have boundaries or borders. It's just global.
Maybe at the end, I can share some thoughts and ideas on the question you're raising, but it's not a trivial matter. A little bit of what I learned when I was at the University of Pretoria, the whole course around what you're asking on innovation management.
Thanks, Gigi. Can I take the liberty of addressing the chair's comment early on around destructive science that we didn't speak about, because I don't think the presentation highlighted an area that's that we are working very closely on, and that is the human and social sciences. Because in some way your responses are not a technological response, it's a social response. So there's lots, and you know that there's been the humanities work, etc. The social sciences, in order to address our challenges, is quite important. So in some ways the response there is, how do you make it unattractive, etc. So that's a response to what you call destructive sciences, and to understand the interface between science, technology, and society. And that's quite a big program of work in DC, and we're advising, you know, some committees that are looking at substance abuse, etc. We're trying to mobilize the scientific community to assist in terms of some of those areas. In terms of the some of the other questions, the development initiatives, I think it would be useful to highlight that DST is not responsible for development initiatives. And development extends from water provision to sanitation to education to health, etc. So very specifically, one of the questions asked is what's the third type of science and technology. And that third type of science and technology is where there needs to be a very close partnership between government, between DST and the department that's responsible for some of these areas, whether it's sanitation. So most of our development, in fact, all of the development initiatives is driven by Program 5, and you'll see it in the way that we've written how we position our work in the APP. It always says in partnership with other government departments. So most of our development work is in partnership. Some examples of these projects, and the one that's been mentioned twice, is Kofimvaba, but there's different aspects of Kofimvaba. Kofimvaba is looking at a number of technologies in an area, but the one big specific one that really has exciting possibilities, and we're working very closely with DBA at this point in time, is e-education. But remember, the investment of the DST is very small, so we wouldn't roll out beyond Kofimvaba. We're using Kofimvaba to understand models of how do you do this, you know, how would teacher development have to change in a sense? What kind of technologies make most sense? Because in a rural area is an example, because you have to think of other issues like charging of the technologies, etc., language content. So our work in e-education is very much located in the Department of Basic Education's e-education strategy, and we look at all of these aspects. And because we need to learn what it means in practice, we have focused on. Most other provinces now have already announced, Gauteng, for example, announced 2 billion rand paperless. They've already contacted the Maraka Institute to see whether we can be a technology advisor. Similarly, Northwest. So as we move forward, our role will be two parts. We will continue in Kofi-Vava because we have to get our hands dirty and understand what it means in practice and reality. But more importantly, we're going to be focusing on becoming a decision support partner, technology partner, to a whole range of other initiatives that exist there, and also not thinking that we have the answers, is to understand what other people are doing, because every day I read the papers, there's more and more e-education initiatives. So I don't know if that answers your question, because we don't necessarily control a big budget. We have budgets for piloting. Whether it's making an improvement in education, this is in fact something that I've been cautious to tell the researchers, don't overclaim successes. You can't use 1 year's results. Previous results, we had seen certain improvement, but whether it's attributed to tablets, we can't say, and we don't want to. As good scientists, you don't want to claim victories where you don't have victories. It's important to understand, however, that when you measure impact, you need to understand how you measure impact. At the moment, the model that is being used is not saying, let's just look at what it does for matric results. Because in fact, tablets are about 21st century skills. And internationally, there's a model now, it's called the 5 C's model. It's saying that in future, young people are going to have to be more equipped with communication skills, collaboration skills, whatever, there's 5 C's. But we don't have an instrument to measure this. ANA doesn't do this, neither does the matric results, etc. So in effect, that's what we're trying to do. So when we monitor impact, it would be monitoring impact on the existing paradigm, but also in terms of new paradigms. If we have kids competing against their peers in China, in Asia, how would e-tablets assist? So it's quite a project. We've had 3 round tables recently where we've pulled together policymakers and practitioners, etc. And that's the role we see ourselves doing, but using the Kofi-Vava experience has been able to now inform decision support. Other development initiatives, important ones, sanitation remains a priority. Where it's general tested technologies that a province or a local government wants to roll out, then it's fine, they would roll out. Where we would support sanitation, as an example, is to look at new cutting-edge solutions. And pleased to announce that we have now a partnership with the Gates Foundation. I don't know if people are aware, they had a major competition to reinvent the toilet. They're now at the stage where they have working prototypes. South Africa is the first country to partner with them to test some of those new technologies, and that's the DST's role. We'll test, and we'll use that to develop decision support that then can go to the, whether it's COPTA or with the new Department of Water and Sanitation. We have projects around sustainable human settlements. We want to move beyond housing to human settlements, where we look at an entire community and how is it that you redesign new cities. In fact, we have a project that we're conceptualizing with one of the provinces where we would then look at an entire new city development, but using cutting-edge technologies on water management, on sanitation management, on electricity, etc. The other area is economic development. We have a project that we've mentioned, sustainable livelihoods projects, but it extends from agriculture, which we've spoken about, to new areas. For example, we have a wireless mesh network project that's development, and it disrupts a big player like Telkom, because it's looking at how small village app operators can provide telecommunication services. Again, our role is one of piloting, and once the pilot works, we would take it up. So, in fact, the kind of development initiatives portfolio is quite extensive, and it requires a lot more time to brief. I think if people read the kind of annual report and when you start visiting the institutions, you'll get some of the sense of this development initiative. So I've addressed that. Decreasing unemployment, I've spoken about as well. Our role is not to, again, we have a role to support efforts to create employment opportunities. We have a direct way of doing this and an indirect way. A direct way is by interns. We have a very successful internship program in the department, but also an internship program that we run, where we send young people who need experiential experience into, as part of our localization program, they go into companies. And many times, people are snapped up even before they finish their giving them an opportunity. Indirectly, we're looking at new opportunities for employment creation, through new industry development, new technologies, and a good project, DG, that people will get more to know about is our mobile applications. We have a thing called an MLab that we're funding at the Innovation Hub. It's a partnership with the World Bank, and this targets particularly young entrepreneurs who would then do mobile applications development, and there's already been success cases in that. So in that way, we're creating employment by creating entrepreneurs, not necessarily, you know, our projects eventually, like titanium, etc., might lead to a big factory, etc. But we can't make that the driver of our projects. The driver of our projects remain, can we commercialize something cost-effectively, etc.? And if it has employment spillovers, then that would be great. And obviously, it would have employment spillovers. And then someone raised the question about people with disabilities. I think with our former deputy minister, it was highlighted effectively that we don't have a robust program. We do have some activities, mainly in ICT space with Morocco, where we're looking at new technologies to assist the blind and the deaf, etc. What we're looking at now is working on a project where we have a better system of tapping into internationally the kind of technologies that are developing for disability management, in a sense. There's a lot happening out there. We don't have to reinvent the wheel, but then identify in our areas where is it that we need to focus on technology development for disability, and then work with people like DBE as part of the inclusive education strategy, or to work with the presidency now, because the minister is gone, to look at the integration of technologies into these areas. So, CJ, I think I've said. And then 1%. The 1%, I think as the DG indicated, the ruling party had a 1.5% target, but we did an interview and we looked at the kind of manifesto of the other parties as well, and one of the recurring themes is across the parties is the need to increase more in R&D. Besides the ruling party, no one set an explicit target. Now, to get that target is quite difficult, and it's going to require a concerted effort internally and externally from players like the Portfolio Committee across a range, whether it's the private sector, and it's not only, it's using things like tax incentives, which the committee will get to know about later. It's using direct co-funding arrangements, like the sector innovation funds. It's going to local governments, it's going to provincial governments and see how they can invest a lot more. And then very important is our international portfolio. But in order to attract international funding, South Africa has to invest more. We have cases where companies have approached us and already good models. We're working with Microsoft and Cisco, SAP, which is a big German company. And they're willing to say, even the Chinese, they're willing to say, let's invest 20 million rand, you match our 20 million rand investment, and we share the kind of results. Now, to do that, we would get some of the benefits, but we also need to invest in it. So we are busy developing that, and I think over the time and through the minister's budget board speech, I think people will get a better sense of what we're doing around trying to increase expenditure quite radically over the next 5 years if we want to compete globally. Okay, I think that's it.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Thanks, DG. I think dealing with the questions around the vacancy rate and the gender representativity in the organization, maybe starting with the gender issue. Currently, our target is to have 49% of management being women, and we're currently sitting at 46%. We also have a budget of around 500,000 rand per annum that we use on programs that develop and prepare female staff to be ready for management in the organization. And in terms of the vacancy rate, our target is 7% vacancy rate per annum. Now we're sitting around 6%. It fluctuates throughout the year, but we want to maintain it so that it doesn't exceed 7% throughout the year. And the acting positions, most of the vacancies, there would be people acting in those vacancies. Our target is to limit that 90 days after the post has been vacated to accommodate the advertising period, the interviews period, with management, there's also additional assessment and then the year month notice in case somebody needs to serve notice before they come. So our target is 90% and we're not off that target much throughout the year. And yeah, I think that's about it.
Thank you, DJ and Honourable Chair and members. DJ, if you're allowed to just add one thing to the IKS that was raised, apart from the advocacy and the mainstreaming and the development of the knowledge into products and services. We also have in the department or in the process of developing what we call a national recordal system, where actually we're capturing the knowledge at sort of grassroots level, and it has a twofold, I think, purpose of capturing the knowledge that sits with the general public, to capture that and archive that so that it's protected in some way, but also to in some way of job creation, because the people within the public, young people, are trained actually as data capturers, to do the data capturing. In that, and then the data is captured initially at the different regions and then in a central database, so that and there is some form of protection on that as well. But I think, as DJ indicated, that when we make the presentation, or the opportunity to make a presentation on the IKS, then we can give more information on that. But I think that's a very important activity also within the IKS program. Then, honourable members and chair, on the question on how do we identify local or develop local talent, we have it in the program program for youth into science component, which these are just examples how we use. It's not exhaustive, but there may be others which I may miss, but. Through the Youth into Science program, we have the science engagement, science awareness, where the students are made aware of, and it normally is associated with some form of talent identification, and bring awareness about it, what science can do. And then one of the key elements within the Youth into Science, also the National Science Week, where we bring students and their parents, but specifically students, across the country to central locations to inform them and bring awareness about the science, but also it's again accompanied by different competitions where the different or students have opportunity to actually showcase their talent and then how they actually come into the fore in terms of what talents they're having. And within that program or component also, I think competitions are very key to talent identification, and we have a number of programs, and the one I can cite is the Olympiads across the different science, mathematical Olympiads and so on, where talented students are actually given the opportunity to again to come to being discovered. And I can probably, in others being the wards also, because I think it's also a pipeline. It's not just at the school level, but I think also the emerging and level where we try to constantly identify talent now, and that's normally awarded. The program here is the Women into Science. We are particularly concentrating on women into science. An example, Chair, probably I can mention around the competitions are important, that is, which I'm closer to my heart, is that recently we've been the Center for High Performance Computing, which is the national facility of the country, was running a competition for undergraduate students to build a supercomputer. And we can proudly say that South Africa, and then participate in international competitions. And in South Africa, for 2 years in a row, won actually the international competition, beating America and China, which is much far ahead in us in building supercomputers now. So again, those are like six students which we know now. That's a talent which is very prevalent in South Africa. So I think those are the instruments that we use to develop the talent, some of them within the department. I think the Honourable Chair asked a question about the number of scientists within the science system, and I think the DG alluded to the fact that we have actually a very small science system. The 2012 or 11-12 R&D survey indicated that we have just under 20,000 scientists across the science system. So, I mean, and the question how we increase that, and the thing the DJ also in the presentation indicated, some of the instruments, like the research chairs that we have as a dedicated instrument to specifically grow the number of postgraduate students, and hence the number of scientists for the country, the centers of excellence, as well as increasing the bursary value so that more students can have access to higher education. But so just under 20,000 scientists that we have in the system according to the latest R&D surveys that we have at hand. The question around then the target of the 100 PhDs per million, I think it's important, and I tried to bring some context to that now. And it's important to maybe the 100 looks as a very small number, but if we look at the current situation, I think you will have appreciation for that. At the moment, we have only 36 PhDs per million, I mean, in South Africa. So you can see 36, you work towards from 36 currently to a target of 100. And again, if we break that further down now in terms of the current outputs in our system, then we have currently, in 2012, we produced 1,800 PhDs in that particular year. So it's about 1,500 PhDs that we're producing annually. So you can and it improved because it's not, actually we're proud to say the system is improving, because in 2008 it was 1,200 and it improved to 1,800, so we're on our way at least to some improvement. So to reach the target of 100 PhD per million, we need to increase from 1,800 to 5,000 PhDs per annum. So you can see it's a huge effort. It's almost a threefold plus increase to get to 100 per million. You need the 5,000 per year PhDs and each to graduate. And I think that the limiting factor in this is the DJ, I think, alluded to that, is the funding for the science system, and it, I think, tied to the 1.5 as well, how much funding we have, as well as the supervisory capacity. And what does it mean again? How many, because you need to have a PhD to train other other students. And in the moment, only 36% of our academics across the system have PhDs. So you can see now it's a very small system, and that means you will have that limiting factor. So there's the funds and the advisor capacity being currently the local. We hope that we can unlock some of that if we increase our funding. And also within the context of the DST is just one of the players in terms of contributing to the human capital development. And the NRF, as our main implementing agency, is contributing less than 10% to the human capital development. So there are other sources like your Department of Higher Education and other sources that also contributing to that. So we as a DST are making very small impact to that. So DJ, that's, I think, a little bit of the context I want to add to this.
Thanks, colleagues. Chair, there are two parts of the question, two questions that we probably need to close with yourself. The first one was this strategic management model that you asked for. It's essentially saying there are three types of science and technology activities. The first one is where you use science to provide decision support. As I said, the examples I gave was the weather as well as the forensics. And therefore, police, and they need to look at those institutions. We don't even know who they are, and we don't get involved in anything. So that's type three. And then there's type two, where in a sector like agriculture or mining, there might be science and technology activities, again, of known science, that you can use to optimize the sector. For instance, if you want to mine in a particular way, you probably know from various parts of the world how you can mine much more efficiently. So the land department is responsible for that. But there could be new ways of mining. For instance, people have told me that these days, if you want to reduce the cost of mining, you need to invest in different techniques for exploring what you want to mine. And people are using what is called satellite technology and spectroscopy to do targeted exploration, so that when you have a mineral in a particular geographic advantage, you know the quantity, or at least you can estimate the quantity, you can estimate the depth, and therefore and the topography, and therefore, in a sense, estimate the cost of investing in that manner. Now, this is something that we would co-invest with the land department so that we can do mining and exploration in South Africa much more efficiently. So the roles for this type 2, the one I'm describing, it's shared roles. So the DST together with the land department. Another example, we've been doing work with the University of Pretoria that's looking at using new techniques in genomics to efficiently plant the trees so that you can genetically modify the trees so that they can have, for instance, in the case of sugar, how you can have the calorimic higher value for sugar than you would if you just didn't, and how you even plant this thing. So this is using new techniques and new technology in an existing sector. And then there's a new set of scientific activities which are new, biotechnology being one, nanotechnology, and other areas that still need to be developed in the country. And therefore, Department of Science and Technology is responsible for developing those as areas of scientific endeavor in the country, but also look at how they can then be used in socio-economic development. So that's type one, and this is mainly the mandate currently of the Department of Science and Technology. Is it working or not? If you invite us another day, we'll be able to share with you exactly our views on whether the strategic management model works or not. But that's what it is. And then the second question that you asked is, why is it that other innovations succeed and others don't? It's really an art, and understanding the market for you and the interest of the society. Sometimes you have good innovations that never see the light of day, and you have others that get into the market briefly and they never succeed. It's really a combination of a range of issues. But of course, sometimes there are forces who may not like a new innovation that comes and disrupts, and they would do all kinds of things which are not written in any book to make sure that technology never sees the light of day. I can give examples of some of the things that I've personally been exposed to, including some of the lessons that we learned on the innovation that we supported in this country for an electric vehicle and why it never succeeded. So these are some of the examples, and now we've learned why. So in this case, you have to know about these things, and in the innovations, know and understand what is it that you need to do if it's a new innovation, either to partner with those that are dominating in the market, or have a strong supporter for the technology who will be able to rattle the feathers, if we use that language, or make things such as making sure that the innovation is supported by your own people first. This is another thing which I think for me is going to be a major problem in South Africa. We have innovations that are very good that we don't believe in South Africa. It's only when they are outside of the country that other people appreciate, and any country that has developed in technological products, they are the first buyers of the technology and they are first users of the technology. Before. Korea is one of the countries. 90% of the Koreans are driving Korean cars, Korean phones and everything. Go to Japan is the same thing. China is the same thing. US is the same thing. So if we are wanting to be serious, we need to be thinking in South Africa around how do we make sure that we believe in the things that we make. Just last anecdote on this. I went to Japan 3-4 years ago, and I was told the Japanese were saying that they no longer want to buy Toyotas. You did not expect this from the Japanese. So we asked them why. And as you know, when any company, as it develops, it's always looking for where it can produce cheaper. So they are now moving their facilities from Japan, or the countries that are East Asia, into cheaper part where they can produce cheaper. One of the countries they identify is in the Philippines. And the Japanese were saying, we trust our engineers who buy a car that is assembled in Japan, but we won't buy a Toyota that is assembled elsewhere because we don't trust others. That's the level of conviction we need to have in our own products. But we are way, way far from The disability rate, I'm told, is 3%, and the national target is 2%, so just to honor. So, Chair, we've tried to exhaust, but again, there might be areas where we may not have reached the expectation of the members, and we'll be happy to come back.
Thank you, Didi. Finished on a note that it's very pertinent that we need to be patriotic. I don't know, but one was thinking, shouldn't we have regulations on some of the things? But it's just a question that we should have regulations. Well, one other thing that is going through my mind is that it's a new department, which some of us were not aware of it, 2004, let alone your 1996, but 2004. And it started with this new dispensation, this new democratic dispensation. But it's work in progress, but you find that in developments like health, you've got MRC, the Medical Services Council. Does MRC belong there or does it belong here? It belongs to health. But do you think it's rightly placed there or it should be here? that's a question for me. Should it be here, or is it right where it is? I suspect it is here. The other one, we're talking of IKS, Indigenous Knowledge. You know, when we were colonized, everything that was looked down, it was called a traditional healer, a traditional medicine, to demarcate that this one is not good enough. And then traditional has got an opposite of the conventional one, which is good. And obviously that gives you a certain mindset that this traditional one is something that I must discard, just by the mere terminology. Now, probably it's high time that we need to find a terminology that is going to make us patriotic and say, even if it is bad, look at the consequences of some of these bad things that are happening, where people make claims, and those claims are not tested, nothing is done. And because I can wake up here and say I'm a traditional, I've got a medicine, and yet I'm killing people often a failure, and I claim that I can cure anything, I can do anything, without going for a test. But we need to guard against that. That mustn't happen. But at the same time, not to look down upon what the good thing that could be coming out of it. Members, I'm sure you've got some follow-up questions on some of the things that you have asked. If there are none, then we'll probably wait for next week and listen to them next week. Are there any follow-up questions then? We're still learning. We're still trying to find out what's going on. Okay, thank you very much, Titi. I think this has been eye-opening for the members. We are going to be reading most of your documents. We have not read them because we're meeting for the first time. So we're going to be looking through your documents and seeing what is going on in the department. And I'm sure by the time we meet next week, though we said we're going to be concentrating mainly on budget because we want to make sure that your budget is enough to be able to do your thing for the next coming year. But at the same time, we're looking forward to making sure that the department succeeds in what it's wanting to do. Okay. Thank you.
Apologies to Katana. We will keep you safe.
Okay. Members, we'll be meeting next week on Wednesday at almost the same time. I don't know the venue, but Tuesday. I'm hoping that everybody, even the new members, know that there's a form that has got to be signed, because at the end of the day, we've got to assess whether people are attending.